Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Anne Mullen from the University of Windsor. She'll be giving us an update on the latest accessibility happenings. So tell me a little bit about the latest accessibility happenings here at the U.
Well, we're super excited about Accessibility Awareness Day happening here on campus, and that's going to be Wednesday, March 18th. This is our third annual event. And the theme for this year is accessible recreation. So our keynote speaker is Luca Lazy Legs Patuelli, who is a break dancer from the Montreal area. And some listeners might be familiar with him. He's been on The Ellen Show, NBC News, So You Think You Can Dance Canada, and he's just amazing. But his message of positivity is one piece of what he talks about, but also a message of how we look at assistive devices. So he uses two crutches for breakdancing, but looking at those crutches as an extension of his movement, the same way that a ballerina's shoes are an extension of her movement. So that's a really powerful message that we're trying to get out to the broader university community. So we're really excited. We have over 180 people registered for the event, a lot of great energy. And then we have 12 other speakers throughout the day, most around accessible recreation. So we have researchers coming in from the University of Toronto that have been working on accessible video game design. We have recreational guidelines for inclusion. We also have a person from the Windsor Public Library coming out to talk about, hey, here are the assistive technologies we have available if, say, you're losing your vision and you want to continue with the joy of reading. So we really tried to hit on different areas of recreation and not strictly focus on it from a sports perspective, but rather all sorts of different perspectives. And one other group that we're really excited about is Signs Restaurant in Toronto is going to be joining us. And that's a restaurant that opened up in July that is staffed predominantly by persons who are deaf and use sign language, and the patrons sign their orders. So it's a really great business concept, and it's also teaching members of the community who might not know how to speak sign language some of those key sign language terms. So yeah, we've got a lot of great things going on and great attendance so far this year, and we're hoping it's going to be a really great day for everybody.
So I find it interesting that you chose recreation and disability life. What was the inspiration behind that?
Well, the first thing was that with the Pan Am Games this year, we were hoping that we could have somebody from Pan Am come out and then we could build on that. Unfortunately, it didn't quite come to fruition, but as we were working that angle, a number of students said, hey, we'd really like to have Luca come out, and he was available. And then we took it from there. But as I say, with recreation, we really wanted to hit on the different areas of it. So not thinking strictly in terms of sports, but dining and reading and playing video games. I mean, these are all pieces of recreation that people enjoy in their daily lives. So we wanted to make sure that we're covering off those areas.
So if a person with a disability here at the U wanted to make use of recreational facilities, what sorts of things are available to support them as they do this?
Well, I think this ties into the approach we've tried to take with accessibility and inclusiveness, that it's a shared responsibility. And so each department has their own mandate and objective, and within that they have a responsibility to make it inclusive. So over at our Human Kinetics Department, St. Denis Center, a lot has been done to make the building accessible, and also so that the programming that's available through there is open to all. So even if folks want to go out and use the gym, that it's set up in such a way that persons with limited mobility or persons who use wheelchairs or walkers can go in and participate. We have, with the event that's coming up, a number of local groups who, parasport groups who are coming out to promote and hopefully recruit persons who might be interested in participating. And my understanding is some of them use the facilities here at on campus. We also, one of the things we've been working on this past year is for social events that are run by groups through the university that are happening off campus, to have those happen in places that are inclusive. So for example, say we have one of the local student societies are going to be holding an event off campus at a restaurant, making sure that it's in a place where everybody can go. So it's not on the second floor of a building that doesn't have an elevator, so automatically persons wouldn't be able to attend. So really getting that message out of when you're planning an event off campus, that it's going to be inclusive as well. But on campus, these more social gatherings and meetings, we've worked quite hard to make sure that all the buildings can be accessed throughout. And we recognize, hey, a lot of things aren't perfect, so that if there are issues that are people experience, contact us, and then that way we know that it's an issue and we can follow up and get it rectified. But yeah, we try with the sporting and with the social aspects to make sure that when those are organized, that it's done in a way that everybody feels or everybody is included and everybody feels welcome and valued when they're participating.
So you mentioned different departments have different nuts and bolts as to how to get this done, so to speak. I assume there is sort of a universal definition in regards to what accessibility means.
Oh, definitely. The approach that we've taken, I mean, you have your definitions that are in the Human Rights Code and in the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act. So we use that as a framework, but what we've built into our policies, and we have been trying to filter out as best we can or communicate with the university community, is that wherever possible, we want to go above and beyond what the requirements are. So like I say, with that, it's a shared responsibility. I don't work over in the engineering building, so I wouldn't know necessarily if, say, there's a certain room that there's an issue, or if there's a process that's been set up that creates a barrier. So what we try to do is educate people about preventing barriers and identifying barriers and what to do when they are identified so that we can address and remove them. But again, it's, you know, we have 16,000 students every year. We have 3,000 to 4,000 employees. If everybody takes a bit of ownership with helping to identify and remove the barriers, then that's going to be much more effective than having one or two people on campus who are going around and trying to find everything. It's really that shared responsibility for us all.
So, what are the next steps for the U in terms of accessibility?
There's programming that's happening or services, but there, I guess we can look at it as there are things that we do each year. And we have an annual accessibility plan that it articulates all of that. So we list out the items that we plan to do for the next year to 5 years. And then we also have the more long-term planning that we put in there within the strategic framework. I can tell you one of the big things that's happening in the next couple months is we're going to be training all employees about the AODA and the Human Rights Code and how they work together. And this is really important because it not only teaches people about responsibilities under the code, but their rights as well. So persons may not be aware of accommodation rights, and it's really important that they know that, so that way systems are being put in place that folks are able to do their jobs and do them to the best of their abilities. So that's a big piece that's coming out. We have our Accessible Built Environment Committee, and what A big project that's been going on is an audit of the UWindsor campus. So we're looking at where there are deficiencies. Once we have that information put together, what we'd like to do is look at developing a strategic framework so that we have, say, a 10-year period where these barriers are going to be removed systematically. As the reality that we work in is many of the buildings on campus were built back in the 60s, 70s, and accessibility just wasn't a consideration. So it's a challenge to retrofit these buildings, but we're up for the challenge and we want to get it done. It's just doing it in a way that we have a strategy behind it and that we have a timeline that we can work with. So those are two big things, but we have a number of accessibility committees. We have 7 in total, and we welcome students' participation. So students can contact our office, our website, or our email address is OHREA, so it's OHREA at uwindsor.ca, and that stands for the Office of Human Rights, Equity, and Accessibility, and can email us if they're interested in participating on our committees. We also have our own website that they can go to, or give us a call. You can call the university directly at 519-253-3000, ask for the Office of Human Rights, Equity, and Accessibility, and we want student input. We want to be engaged, and we want to get the feedback so that we can move forward with some of these initiatives.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Thanks, Kim.
Of course. Always love to hear about new initiatives, especially in educational facilities, because if you think about it, it is the educators and the institutions that are building for the future. If these students learn now what accessibility truly means and what its real impact is, they can go forward, and as they become the leaders of tomorrow, they can create a more accessible, more understanding environment. That's what it's all about, folks. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
I'm Ontario Fire Marshal Tedvin Slavik. If you own a cottage, it's important that you prepare and practice a home fire escape plan that provides 2 ways out of every room. Also, check the age of smoke and carbon monoxide alarms. If any smoke alarm is over 10 years old or any CO alarm is more than 7 years old, replace them. You may have as little as 1 minute to escape a burning cottage. Don't let tragedy spoil your summer fun. Visit safeathome.ca for more tips.
Smoke and CO alarms. Check them and replace them.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Anne Mullen from the University of Windsor. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Bob Santos from Link Up Employment Services. So tell me a little bit about Link Up.
Well, Link Up Employment Services for Persons with Disabilities is an organization that was created approximately 23 years ago. It initially started off as an organization that was to assist people with disabilities in obtaining training. What ended up happening is with a grant from the federal government, the organization was able to coordinate the training of the various individuals with disabilities.
So,
hello?
Please continue.
Sorry, Tim. So what ended up happening was that the organization then saw that there had been a lot of success in training individuals. However, there was an issue with placing them these folks after obtaining their training, obtaining employment. So Link Up was created in order to assist these individuals. And subsequently, Link Up took on a larger responsibility or a larger, basically took up the responsibility of trying to assist individuals with disabilities find employment, and that's basically how it initiated.
So what type of disabilities do you most commonly see in this work?
I would have to say we are a cross-disability organization, and there isn't one specific, like I said, there's also, you know, in our 23 years, we have seen different people from the community, different disabilities. But what is predominant, I would say, is that regardless whether it's primary or a secondary disability, mental health issues are do have a significant impact on individuals that we do see.
So are there any challenges in the process of getting training or employment for individuals with disabilities?
Sadly, there are many, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, we try to combat these stigma related to the employment of people with disabilities by either creating tools or building trust relationships with employers to try to defeat those. The way that we look at things, Cam, is we try to look at this from a productivity and profitability point of view and try to not really look at the disability. Because at the end of the day, the employers that we're working with are looking for productive employees and want to obviously make a profit. So we try to get the right person for the right job. And by creating that link, then there's going to be success on the job and retention.
So, on the subject of success, in your time working to get individuals with disabilities better employment and training, has there been any success moment that stood out for you?
I would say we've had many successes, and there's been a lot of eye-opening experience that we've had. I think what's really important is that individuals with disabilities that can work and want to work must work. And regardless of their disability, I think a lot of people do judge individuals based on their disability and their ability to do the job. Sadly, ourselves at times, you know, doubt certain individuals because of disability. But yet, the more we work with these individuals and the better understanding we have, then we also see that, again, and I'll repeat it because I believe it's so important, that if the individual can work, they must work. And therefore, there is a, you know, a job for this person out there. And therefore, it's our obligation to make sure these individuals can work, do work, regardless of what our society might say or our community might say. We basically at LinkUp work with individuals who have been deemed unemployable. And therefore, pretty much everybody that we put into employment or that we link with an employer is a success.
So, when working with an employer, how do you go about dispelling some of the myths you alluded to earlier?
Cam, I think that the most important thing is when you're dealing with employers, you're building this trust relationship, and you focus in on the needs of the employer as opposed to their wants. Similar to great examples is when you're dealing with a child at Christmas time, you know, when you ask them for their Christmas list and their list of wants, but when you ask their mother what their needs are, they're significantly different. Same thing happens with an employer. And this only occurs when you can only find out the needs of an employer if you are in tune with the employer. You're in tune with what they do, their environment, and everything around or all the different areas that are important to the employer for them to be productive and profitable. So therefore, we have to be in tune with them. We have to build a relationship with them so that when we make the link for their future employee, that we have a great understanding. And not only that, but also that the employer has confidence that we're looking looking after their best interests. By doing all this work, which is significant, it builds also the foundation for a successful placement. And more importantly, not only the placement, but it leads to retention in the workplace for that individual.
So when you mention an employer's best interests, does that include things like explaining about adaptive equipment or accommodations, how these can be simpler things than they might seem on the surface?
Exactly. And that's exactly it too, Cam.
So if you could send any one message about the need for disability employment, what would it be? So if you could send any one message about the need for employment for individuals with disabilities, what would you say?
I would say, and this is something that I'm very strong on, is that if an individual can work, they must work. And when we focus in on the individuals that we work with, the fact that productivity and profitability should be the pinnacle. And the individuals that we work with specifically, we have had great success because we have taken that road where we're finding the right job for the right person. And at the end of the day, we don't want it to be a charity. We want it so that employer is hiring based on the person's ability. And we've been in business for 23 years, and we've had a lot of success, and we have had a lot of retention of the individuals that we have placed. And we believe that that's the only way to work with employers, is to build a trust relationship and to put the right person into the right position. And by doing so and taking that time to do it properly and building the trust relationship with all individuals and all stakeholders involved in the process, then you're going to have success, retention, you're going to have promotion in the workplace, and hopefully then there will be this level of education and awareness in the workplace, because people are going to get real-time experience working with individuals with disability.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you, Ken.
Bob was 100% correct in his philosophy, in my opinion, that a person with a disability who has a capability to work, and I believe that to be the vast majority of them, they should take it upon themselves. It is simply because it contributes not only to the betterment of society, not only does it add a new perspective to a workplace, but it enriches the life of a person with a disability. One who spends their whole life putting up roadblocks saying, "I can't work, I'm not going to try," I don't think they'll ever find as much fulfillment as one who doesn't let their disability be the all-defining factor. Truth is, it's all in how you look at it. If you look at it as one facet of a person's life, one aspect of who and what they are, who they are, what they do, it can be ruled by a disability, or it can be incorporated into the larger puzzle, which I think simply the way it should be. From my own experience, a person with a disability, with the right motivation, they can find a way to achieve anything. Might be modified in some ways, but the fact of the matter is, there is a way for anyone, regardless of the disability, to lead a full, enriched life. And in the end, that's all that counts. Can you find fulfillment? Can you find happiness and meaning each day? And by entering into a workplace situation, getting to know new people, getting to know more about the world and its workings, that adds greatly to this fulfillment, I think. But so too is it benefiting the employer. An employer who hasn't had much contact with individuals with disabilities, one who has been led to believe the myths and the stereotypes surrounding disability life, they might be all the better, all the more complete as a person by actually sitting down with someone with a disability, talking with them, getting to know them, getting to understand who they are, what matters to them, what their capabilities truly are. Because, from my perspective, I've always seen it as, if you see a person with a disability achieve, then you say to yourself, if this person with a disability can accomplish A, maybe this person over here with a different type of disability can accomplish B. It's a very eye-opening experience, and once you have the veil lifted, so to speak, you don't go back to assuming that individuals with disabilities can't achieve. You don't go back. You don't see a person with a disability making real strides, real progress within the community, and then say, oh, it was just a one-time thing, it was just a fluke. You don't. It changes your outlook, and you come to understand not just about disability strength, but human strength. Because none of us knows just how strong we are till we're dealing with the circumstances. When you look at a situation, you don't always see the other side. You don't always see the solution. And it can be frustrating. It can be challenging. But to have support, to have people there to help you find the right opportunity, the right tools, you can eventually get to the other side of a problem. Then reflect upon it, gain, learn, and grow from the experience. We as a society should really be encouraging individuals with disabilities to enter the workforce. Our economy is still recovering. The fact is, we need individuals to disregard their own skills and to say, I don't think I can work, therefore I'm going to spend my life on the welfare roll. The truth is, a person must recognize their own skills, their own capabilities, and they must be assertive enough to say, I believe I can contribute. I believe that I have the capability to move forward. Now, in some cases, there are genuine circumstances that don't allow for a person to maintain a job over a long period of time. However, logic and experience would both tell us that what we must do is find out whether something really can work before we assume that it cannot. If we just go in with the attitude, accommodations are too hard, too expensive, take too much time, we'll never find a meaningful solution. We'll never be able to provide those opportunities for these individuals. However, if we look at it from the standpoint of, these are the circumstances, these are the physical differences that we must work with, not overcome, work with. That means to find a way to make use of the skills that do exist. It's all a matter of attitude, folks. It's all a matter of our willingness to try. 9 times out of 10, there is a solution if you look hard enough. It's not necessarily an immediate cure, but it's a step forward. And if you take enough of those, you can make real progress. Disability rights, changes in attitudes, changes in policies, they are building for the future. And evolution in this way can't be stopped. Moving towards greater enlightenment is not something we should veer away from or even try. We should keep our minds open, have a willingness to work and stand alongside individuals with disabilities to help them reach their best. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.